I did want to talk about, speaking of traditional jazz, although I don't know if you've always been traditional, you did a lot of experimentation in your early days. You recorded Bold Conceptions, your first album with the Bob James Trio, in 1962. That's a 50-year anniversary.
It is. You're right. Actually, don't remind me.
Well, it's 50 years of the best music one can make.
I'm very proud to still be doing it.
I noticed a song on that album, Trilogy, used some slide whistles, and I don't know how often you ever play some of the music from that first album, but I noticed it's, some stuff is pretty experimental for its time.
That was very important to me at that time. I had just come out of college. It was an interesting time in music history, both from the classical standpoint, and there was a lot of very experimental, very avant-garde jazz stuff going on at that time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the classical composers were pushing the envelope to try to go to the extremes of what would be considered art and trying to figure out what all that meant. I just was reading recently a biography of John Cage, who was maybe one of the most influential, famous, really, really avant-garde classical musicians, and he was prominent at that time. And I was studying classical composition in college, and we were all investigating all aspects of the fringe, and I was fascinated by it, and I was occasionally called upon to perform the music of the avant-garde composers at that time, because even in the classical realm of that music, the conventional classical performers didn't want to play it because it was too crazy, it called upon them to do things that they were not prepared in the conventional technique way to do. But the nature of jazz improvisation, I think we didn't have a problem with doing some of that stuff. So I was having fun exploring it and testing my own taste and testing my own interests. So it was a very exploratory time for me and fun. And I just like what we were talking about before in this conversation, I guess I always have had that desire to surprise the listener in some kind of way, and to stay ahead of the listener, to not do what's predictable. And even though I've become, for the most part, a romanticist in recent years, and I'm happy in that world, still there's some leftovers from when I was in college and that kind of risky approach to making music. I have great memories of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And what led to my first record, Bold Conceptions, was that we were really rebelling against traditional jazz at that time, some of my comrades that I was making music with, and we learned that there was a collegiate jazz festival down at Notre Dame University, and I decided to enter that competition primarily because we wanted to shock the judges and we wanted to shock the audience. We went down there and we played probably the most out music that I ever played in my life when we went down there, but we mixed it in with playing some straight ahead Dizzy Gillespie tunes and some just pretty much conventional jazz. But even in the midst of our conventional tunes, we would suddenly go completely left. And to my surprise and delight, I found a very receptive audience in Quincy Jones, who at that time was very early in his career. And I think he loved the fact that we were going up against the establishment and had the guts to not treat that competition just as a conventional thing. And to to our big surprise, we won the festival, and all three of us won on our individual instruments. And sometimes I think they said that we won in spite of all of that crazy stuff that we did. But I believe that it was all part of a communication thing that we were on the cutting edge, and I think Quincy realized it. He wanted to be part of it, and he, at that festival, invited me or assigned me to this record deal with Mercury, because he was an A&R guy with Mercury at that time, and that's how we got our first record.
Oh, wow. And that also led to you working with Sarah Vaughan?
Yes, indirectly at that time, because I didn't really meet her and have that opportunity until a few years later when I moved to New York. But it was definitely, Quincy was a big part of the recommendation, and word of mouth and mm-hmm. all those things that end up being very important mm-hmm. in the music business.
So, what were some of your other influences in the early days, and you have any new influences recently?
Always. I guess I was influenced by many, many people at that time, and in the classical world, Stravinsky has always been a big influence. But in jazz, as far as my biggest, what I considered my biggest influences, were Oscar Peterson and Count Basie and Bill Evans. Those are the names, for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar's unbelievable technique and powerful swing feeling. I tried to emulate him and actually gave up. His technique was so awesome that I decided, you know, I'm going to have to go a different direction. I'm not going to be able to go there. And Bill Evans, in many ways, had equally impressive technique in a different way, but he approached the piano, for the most part, in a kind of simpler way that was more about his very beautiful voicings and all that. So I learned a lot from him. And being trained as an arranger, I loved the Count Basie band, and I loved some of those great Count Basie arrangements, and I loved the way he used the piano in a large ensemble setting, very sparingly, but just sprinkled in these really, really cool things at the best possible times, and I always loved that, and was very influenced by him.
Oh, wow. Well,
and you asked about recently,
mm-hmm.
and of course I was influenced by and have really enjoyed the collaboration with Keiko Matsui, but also I have become a huge admirer of Hiromi, who, again, another lady, Japanese musician, but surprisingly coming out of the Japanese culture, Hiromi, I believe, is one of the most original and adventurous musicians that I've heard in a long, long, long time. She has a tremendous confidence and playfulness about her music that incorporates a lot of what we've been talking about today, this surprise element, taking you places that you don't expect. And sometimes they are places that a lot of people have a hard time going to. And she's also had some maybe not the best encounters with the purist world. But in my opinion, she's definitely in the same league as the Keith Jarretts and Chick Corea's of our generation. And, well, she's a lot younger than they are, so she's got a lot more time to develop, too. But she's an influence, and we had wonderful experience over in Switzerland. I was on tour with the Foreplay group last, I guess it was November, playing at a festival in Zurich, and she was on the same bill. And we happened to have a few hours off and went over to catch her performance. And all four of us were so blown away by it that it ended up really changing the whole tour for us. We started reinvestigating our music and really asking a lot of questions. Are we being adventurous enough? And so many different things. And I am happy to report, I think, that it's a mutual admiration deal, because she ended up, after her show, coming over to hear us and was very complimentary about what we do as well. So,
wow. I'm not familiar with her music, but I'm going to get familiar very soon.